I'm Ruthie.
And I'm Brad.
And welcome to Our Married Life. Together we study and discuss how to live the teachings of the Urantia Book.
Well, welcome once again here into our home, where it is currently raining in the desert. We always like that.
Woohoo!
Yeah, we just got back from a little walk, and we're going to talk a little bit now about paper 123. We're studying all of Jesus' childhood. You know, Ruthie, this is where a lot of people start reading the Urantia Book, is here in part four. It's pretty easy to read, but it's also pretty easy to just look at all the facts. Oh, Jesus' dad got promoted to being a contractor. What do I do with that? We're asking, what do we do with this stuff? And, you know, I know we want to look at paper 123, section 4 and 5, but we covered so much last week. I know there's something in section 3 that drew your attention you thought we might back up on and take a look at.
Yeah, there are a couple important topics to me. Would you be willing to read one of these short paragraphs here?
Yeah, sure. Let's take a look at this one here.
During the events of the sixth year.
Thank you. Yeah. During this year, Joseph and Mary had trouble with Jesus about his prayers. He insisted on talking to his heavenly father much as he would talk to Joseph, his earthly father. This departure from the more solemn and reverent modes of communication with deity was a bit disconcerting to his parents, especially to his mother, but there was no persuading him to change. He would say his prayers just as he had been taught, after which he insisted on having just a little talk with my father in heaven.
I love that for a lot, many reasons, actually, more than I thought or initially. I mean, the first thing, which you and I have talked about before, is the fact that Jesus was clearly, how would I say this? Not self-assertive, but clearly comfortable in stating his own needs or his own, you know.
Being an individual.
Sure. And being integrous to what he saw to be truthful. But in a cooperative way. I mean, this is the least disruptive he could be.
Right.
Without just choosing not to act as an individual and to, you know, just keep his mouth shut. But if he's willing to be a religionist who acts in the world, it's beautiful. You know, I've mentioned to you before, Brad, sometimes in reading about Jesus's childhood particularly his childhood, there are many moments, you know, whether it's here with the prayers or, you know, drawing faces in the sand at school, where I feel like I really resonate with him. Like, yeah, Jesus, right? Like art, yes. And, you know, praying for yourself, yes. But what's different between the two of us is I don't think I carried his same level of regard and respect and obedience to the customs, even though he didn't understand and agree with them. So that's interesting to note.
Yeah. Well, thinking back on my life, I tended to be more just blindly obedient by temperament. I think a parent of mine would affirm that. That said, I was a Montessori kid. You were too for a while. So I know there was a strong sense of, hey, you're an individual. You've got some independence here. So we do want to hear what you have to think. And, you know, the other thing that makes this, what Jesus was doing here with prayer, I don't know how conscious or unconscious, this is just what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
It reminds me of elsewhere in the Urantia Book, they talk about prayer being this evolution of the alter ego, this evolution, it's wired into us. We, you know, we're designed to pray.
Right. Yeah. And sort of, I'm not going to remember the language either, but you paraphrased in an earlier conversation, you know, it starts with your imaginary friend.
Right.
In a sense, which I never had imaginary friends that I remember. Did you?
I did. Yeah.
You did?
I had, and he went to first grade with me and he sat across from me and I was really miffed when a kid sat down in his chair, but yeah.
How is it, you said first grade?
First grade, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I have no recollection of this. Fascinating. I wonder statistically how many people.
Yeah.
Well, in any case, but that's mentioned, as you say, as being a sort of natural part of the process.
It is. And, you know, here I am soundly in middle age. And in some ways, I'm just now discovering this, just having a little talk with my father that, you know, I think we've been exploring prayer life in our marriage. And I've discovered it's tremendously valuable to just go have a little talk with my father in heaven, as yeah. I would have a trusted friend or my own father.
Well, and I'll bring our attention to a couple sentences back in paper 91. Modern man is perplexed by the thought of talking things over with God in a purely personal way. Ellipses. Man should be unafraid to talk to God. So considering this, I do have to wonder, what are we to make exactly of Jesus' natural inclination? To what extent did his being a bestowal son play into this? To what extent did his particular temperament, you know, derived from Joseph and Mary come into play? To what extent was it just overall, quality of genetics? I guess I already said that, speaking of temperament, but...
Well, yeah, but the his parents, they were selected out of, like, a number sure. of finalists, and, like, maybe they said, well, this is probably going to be a household that will not just squash any modicum of yeah. individual religious expression, which we know this culture can be prone to doing.
And yet, Joseph and Mary were quite disturbed.
Right.
Both of them.
They got over it, but they were disturbed.
Right. So it's just interesting. We won't belabor that too much, but, you know, it is one of the curiosities for me, what exactly to make of that. But in any case, it certainly gives me inspiration to relay to our someday children, God willing, to present prayer in this manner, that it's really just a personal talk with God. And while I didn't have imaginary friends, something that did just come to mind actually was, this is probably once I was older. I think I was still at home in yeah. adolescence. In any case, I remember mentioning something to my mom about my going for walks, which I still do quite often.
You do.
And I often rehearse, I guess, is how some people call it. But talking to myself, if I can admit that publicly, because I know I'm not alone. And it's often to, like, just processing life, you know, and I think I often have in the past imagined, like, someone in particular in my life that I'm talking to.
Yeah.
But it's a curious thing, because very seldom did I actually think, oh, I'm rehearsing this so I can actually tell this narrative to that person someday. It seemed like that was a helpful framework for me to be able to work through something, but I don't think I ever really expected to do that.
And right.
In any case, I'm taking a long time to simply share that when I told my mom that I would do this at some point, I remember she said, well, I think you're really talking to God.
Hmm.
I don't know how to respond to that exactly, but it certainly planted a seed. And I think that has definitely now become a conscious thing I'm trying to sort of shift away as I talk on my walks to more consciously direct it toward God.
I've been doing the exact same thing. I know we've talked about this. We try to go on daily walks around our neighborhood, and I've often had this rich inner dialogue. I'm like, well, what if I was just directing that to God instead of, I don't actually know who I'm talking to. It's just some alter ego of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that instantly when I do that here as an adult, there's just an extra level of comfort and ease mm-hmm. that comes with it, because, well, I know God will listen. We have a favorite song where, you know, in addition to being a parent, he's also a free psychologist, a great psychologist.
Says Stevie Wonder.
Yes.
Well, that's interesting. That's actually helpful for me to think through. I don't think I recognized it till this moment that, okay, that is how I relate to the alter ego progression of prayer. For often when I would read that, you know, elsewhere in the book, I would just think, well, I don't know. I guess I'm just an anomaly. Mm. But no, it just has expressed itself differently with me, I think.
Right.
Moving on, we'll see how far we get, because there's another juicy topic, I think, still in section 3. And that's on the topic of discipline. And I'd like to read, this is paragraph 9, still in the 6th year. This year, Jesus made great progress in adjusting his strong feelings and vigorous impulses to the demands of family cooperation and home discipline. Mary was a loving mother, but a fairly strict disciplinarian. In many ways, however, Joseph exerted the greater control over Jesus, as it was his practice to sit down with the boy and fully explain the real and underlying reasons for the necessity of disciplinary curtailment of personal desires in deference to the welfare and tranquility of the entire family. When the situation had been explained to Jesus, he was always intelligently and willingly cooperative with parental wishes and family regulations.
Mm.
What comes up for me is reflecting on my childhood and the times that I was reminded that I had transgressed a certain boundary or rule by sheer force, you know, because I told you so or because that's the rule.
Right.
You know, at best, that got resentful compliance, but sometimes it didn't even get that. But the times in which I was able to understand either for myself, sometimes that happened intuitively, but, you know, and other times when the adult around actually did this for me, helped me explain, it was a game changer. I mean, this shifted the whole experience from a power play into, oh, I'm actually learning how things work in the world. And
right.
Now I'm an agent. I'm actually empowered. You know, I've been given knowledge and understanding, and now I get to do something. It doesn't mean I will make perfect choices all of the time, but that definitely feels different.
Yeah, I was probably a little easier to just fall into line, even if the rules seemed arbitrary. I just may just, that may be a temperamental thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've talked previously here on a previous episode about how much I enjoyed my dad explaining the how of something, sitting on his mm-hmm. knee and showing how the refrigerator worked or something mechanical. I think that, you know, a child who has the Holy Spirit ministry, you know, who, and, you know, by the time that we're reading this paragraph, Jesus, we know, had a thought adjuster. So he would have had mm-hmm. the Holy Spirit,
right.
all the seven adjutant mind spirits,
right.
he had the full, you know, buffet of mm-hmm. ministries. I think that explaining something in a cause and effect kind of way
mm-hmm.
will work. I can almost hear a parent out there maybe scoffing at this, you know, two prospective parents here talking about this. Oh, you just explain why to a kid. Well, this hinges upon another passage that we really like. They talk about this wise discipline at a young
mm-hmm.
age.
Right.
Like, they don't tell us what that looked like in
right.
this household that Jesus grew up in and later ran after his dad died.
Right.
But it sure seems like if you can get whatever this wise discipline at a young age in place,
yeah.
by the time you got a 6, 7, or 8-year-old kid, maybe you can just explain things to them and they can begin to understand, oh, of course, that's the way that it works
yeah.
if the rule makes sense.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And obviously character is a play in this, too. You know, the moral culture of the household, you know, I think this presupposes sincerity, first of all.
Well, yeah.
You know, and obedience. I mean, I imagine there are all kinds of things that could have happened, you know, in the years preceding that, if done differently, would have made this particular, well, it's not one scene, but these recurring scenes more difficult. And we won't belabor this point, but I don't have to have raised children yet. I have taught enough that I'm well aware where this can be distorted, you know, and why we need discernment as teachers, parents, you know, authority figures, is to recognize when a child is trying to pull one over.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but, well, explain to me why more, you know, because then the longer we do that, the longer we're procrastinating before they have to do whatever they need
to do. The consequences, or hoping you run out of gas and just
right,
give up.
Right. So anyway, we won't get distracted by getting too much into that. But I just want to uplift the ideal and that it appears to have been fulfilled to some degree with Jesus by Joseph. And again, just coming back to Joseph, because of this technique, is the one who exerted the greater control, even though Mary was the one called a strict disciplinarian. So
yeah.
even when we think we're maybe just trying to resort to brute force or control by just, you know, laying down the law, I mean, just know that it may just be an illusion anyway, that you're, it's backfiring. You may not actually end up having the greater control over the situation.
Yeah.
It's still, we're will creatures. By the time we have thought adjusters, at least, we know we are will creatures. So that's the only way, is to appeal to that will. that's long lasting anyway.
If you want to be parenting something that was designed, something that is a human, you know,
right.
if you want to program a robot into
right.
some sort of dutiful, you know, programmed obedience, that's a different thing entirely. But we want to raise humans.
And that, well, and we don't have time nor the qualifications at this moment to really expound on this a ton, but I will just plant a seed for myself and anyone listening to come back to. That to me is what I'm looking for when I read about different parenting styles, because there are some schools of thought and some approaches that seem to focus much more on behavior modification than actually trying to grow the inside of the person, which of course then ends up in influencing the behavior. It's not that all behavior is okay, but if we only pay attention to that superficial manifestation of the true character, you know, hopefully also a burgeoning soul, then I think we're missing something. So,
yeah.
Yeah. What is it that you're trying to create here? A perfect behavior machine or a free-thinking, independent cosmic citizen?
Potential finaliter, right. And the latter of those two, the better option, I would contend, the human thing, you can have trust. You can have trust that some of this stuff, if you're just providing the favorable conditions in the home, some of this will work itself out on its own.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, you know, just briefly touching on something that caught me in section four. Clearly, they're talking about playtime a lot, the need that children have for a lot of playtime. And there's a lot of benefits to that. I mean, there's the curiosity that gets satisfied, but there's also learning through organized games, as they talk about in section four. Just the way the world works. Oh, here's why we don't trip someone when they run past us in soccer, because that could really hurt them. That could break a limb. All right, you know, you begin to figure out cause and effect there too. And so you can trust that children, if just left to play, they'll figure out they'll negotiate some of this stuff on the playground on their own, with the parents just ensuring that the perimeter fence is up, that the boundaries are sort of in place, that they have a safe place to explore some of this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah.
You know, another really important thing I want to get to in section five, but before we do, I'm wondering if you might be willing to share a story, which, you know, reminds me of a bit of, a couple of things in Jesus's early childhood. I mean, one, there's that snowstorm, but,
all right.
but also just in general, how he learned science, because it wasn't in school.
Right. Well, and it's not fundamentally a scientifically literate society. This is what we would call a pre-scientific society, but still he was just very curious. And like we talked about last week, his parents would try to answer his many questions. He had a lot of questions about nature and the story from my childhood. And so it convicts me to remind myself that young children have not experienced the world yet. You know, when I was 6 years old, it got below freezing in my home outside, of course. And I begged my parents, could I just put a little dish of water out in the backyard and watch it freeze? And they kind of looked over at the freezer and said, let's let him do that. Yes, we have an appliance that does that, but there's something going on here. And yeah, it's still a core memory for me. It was just enrapturing to watch this water slowly freeze from the outside inward. And I brought it in and marched it in proudly and said, you know, look what I did. I don't know what I was, look what nature did.
Yeah.
But, you know, grown-ups, ice is usually an inconvenience outside. You slip on it in your car, you can't get out of the driveway. But to a six-year-old, watching the phase change of water is just marvelous.
Right, as he did with the steam, I think is what they mentioned with Jesus, the same thing.
Yeah, sure.
Know, watching the steam in the kitchen.
Yeah, exactly.
Fascinating, that phase shift. Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to read... Yeah, I'd like to read the whole paragraph.
Yeah.
This is in section five. If you have your book open, it's paragraph eight. Jesus received his moral training and spiritual culture chiefly in his own home. He secured much of his intellectual and theological education from the Chazen. But his real education, that equipment of mind and heart for the actual test of grappling with the difficult problems of life, he obtained by mingling with his fellow men. It was this close association with his fellow men, young and old, Jew and Gentile, that afforded him the opportunity to know the human race. Jesus was highly educated, in that he thoroughly understood men and devotedly loved them. To me, the first thing that comes up that I just find very beautiful about this is redefining education.
Hmm.
And I say redefining because I, speaking for myself, when I think of that word, and I think it's fair to say how I hear many people use that word, it seems to evoke more of, you know, the fact realm, the knowledge realm. We think of someone as being educated or cultured because they have a large knowledge base, and perhaps are capable of, you know, high order thinking and you know, impressive cognitive feats.
Right.
But this to me really speaks to something much different. It's an equipping of the mind and the heart. Jesus being educated because he understood men and loved them. That just inspires me as a prospective parent when we consider, you know, whether it's what school or, I mean, I'm thinking even bigger than that, the whole childhood system that yeah. we'll be curating. How do we help prioritize that kind of education?
I think that's exactly the question to be asking. And, you know, just in the brief time we have left here, I just want to point out, you know, there are no accidental words, no accidental adjectives in the Urantia book. And they refer to it as a real education, mm-hmm. as in something pointing toward reality. And
yeah.
this reminds me of that amazing part where they say basically relationships are mm-hmm. the point. Like they're an end of themselves right. in the cosmos. Everything else is a means to that end. I guess reading, writing, arithmetic, all means to the end of having better mm-hmm. relationships, because that was the pattern that was set up on high with the yeah. with the original I am becoming two, and then the Father and the Son, the Spirit. So there's something very deep here. Like, yes, you do need to learn how to read and write and compute arithmetic, but
yeah.
Yeah. Understanding men and devotedly loving them. Well, you know, love is a very high word in this book, too.
Yeah. I'm almost tempted to just leave it there, but there's just one other thing in this paragraph that pops out to me, and that's that first sentence, that Jesus received his moral training and spiritual culture chiefly in his own home.
Yeah.
Brad, you and I have mentioned more than once in reflecting on Jesus's early childhood and, you know, trying to glean what can we learn as parents from this time. And we've sort of, I don't want to say we've lamented, but we've remarked on, well, wouldn't it have been easier in certain ways? Because everyone in the town would have gone to the same synagogue. They would have, you know, that there's an account, religious accountability that right. is just not the same where we live today.
Not today.
And yet, he still received his moral training and spiritual culture at home. So that yeah. that makes me feel a little better. I mean, you know, the intellectual and theological education he got elsewhere, primarily, they're saying. But that makes me feel a little more empowered as a parent.
It should, you know. Yeah, empowered, but also a little, like, parenting is challenging. It's supposed to be. It's a supreme responsibility, and you don't get out of the local system in your ascension career without having an effective form of it.
Right.
So, you know, running an effective home is something that we will have to experience for some high unrevealed destiny. So,
yeah. And with that, I think we'll wrap today's episode up.
I think that we will, but that was delightful. Glad that we were able to share this time with you from our home here in the desert, where I think I may still hear the pitter-patter of rain. Maybe we can go out there and enjoy it a little more here tonight. But, well, we hope that this was helpful to you in your walk with God and your thoughts and reflections and prayers about family. Until next time, God bless.
Bye-bye.